Breaking the Panel is made possible by you and other listeners just as awesome as you are. If you want to support the show and get a little something in return, just go to patreon.com/breakingthepanel, because we do appreciate the help.
Okay, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, I'm going to burn your damn house down.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Movies, television, you'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
And welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we go bigger, better, better, more, deeper, diving, digging, finding stuff to talk about. Sometimes you have to scrape the bottom of the barrel. Sometimes you get a flood of news, but you know we're going to talk about all kind of geekery and full frontal nerdity and all kind of awesome sauce. I'm the Rock Guy Epoxy.
I think that needs to stay in there.
It might. Mike just might bleep the shit and roll it. I am the Rock God of c***ing today, Charles McFall. I've got the on my head. So here are your for the c***er with me today. The man who is a swine flu of podcasting, Paul Klotz.
Wow, that's rude.
A little harsh.
Oh, no. You're all right, because we've got the Ebola of podcasting, Chris Wisdom.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm going to make sure the monkey gets me to you.
You've been eating that bush meat, Chris?
Yep.
I totally should have brought Travis in on this one, just because I didn't realize I was going to be this foggy, and he would have helped keep Chris in check. I think unfortunately, Klotz, with me being at like 50%, you're going to have to handle Chris today. And
okay,
it's a Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the chit chatting, right? So first off, we're not going to read it yet. We're going to read the email later on in the show, but we do have an email, and how you get that to us is btp@giantsizeteamup.com. B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel @giantsizeteamup.com. We absolutely want to hear from you. And of course, we have the Facebook page, facebook.com/breakingthepanel. And we are a proud flagship show of the Giant Size Team Up Network. With all that out of the way, Klotz, you've got some interesting things coming that I didn't think would ever mash up well.
What's that?
The f***ing note that you have here at the top of our notes to lead with.
I just like to hear you squirm. That's the reverse of what you normally do to me.
Touché, sir. Touché.
So on Halloween Day, the famous children's horror author, R.L. Stein, who is famous for the Goosebumps series, was doing an Ask Me Anything. And somebody kind of asked him a question that led him to be like, admit basically that he's writing something for Marvel Comics right now, but he can't tell you what it is. And so there were a number of responses who were like, well, you just kind of let the cat out of the bag, man. Like, nobody knew about that. So we have no information about this, but I just wanted to let people know. If you're like myself, who grew up in the era of Goosebumps being like everything that every kid read, this seems kind of exciting. I have no idea what this is going to be about, but I kind of am hoping that maybe it's some of the horror side of Marvel Comics. Maybe he's going to do a fun run at some of the crazier stuff, like maybe some Elsa and all that kind of business, which would be
Squirrel Girl and Ghost Rider team up. That would be kind of
this year. I mean, that next the big event that's going to happen is Monsters Unleashed. So they're going to do
So it's very likely that will tie in.
What is Monsters Unleashed? It sounds like a Skylander game.
Wait, that's that next big Marvel.
The big,
like a Civil War level event.
Yeah, and they're bringing back all the Marvel monsters and stuff. So
crossover.
Yep. Well, being the filthy casual with some of that, give me some of the Marvel monsters. I mean, I can figure out some. You know, Elsa Bloodstone will probably be in there, right?
Werewolf by Night.
Yeah. Man-Thing? Is Man-Thing Marvel?
Man-Thing is Marvel, yeah. And okay. I assume. So.
Swamp Thing is DC. Man-Thing is Marvel. Yeah, okay. What else? What are some? I know Dracula's been in Marvel. What are some of the monsters that I might be missing?
And I wonder if they're going to do the Franken-Punisher.
Mm-hmm. So I like that. Yeah, because Frankenstein's monster is technically part of canon. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so there's some wiggle room there. And who better? Like, could you just... Oh, man, I'm so excited. See,
So wait. We know they've been doing this thing with mutants, and regular humans call mutants monsters. Would this just be them reintroducing mutants back in the Marvel universe? We tricked you guys. It's just X-Men coming back.
Yeah.
What were you excited about?
I'm excited at the notion because, you know, R.L. Stein is like, he's really good at what he did. I mean, he really defined a whole generation's, you know, reading. Like, I mean, there were tons of stories in the Ask Me Anything, right, where people were like, hey, you know, Bob, you made me read. Like, I hated reading, and, you know, your books got me to start reading. And because they're real page turners, they're short, they're quick, you know what I mean? But, like, he accomplished such an amazing thing when he did in the 90s. Of getting a lot of kids who wouldn't read otherwise to read, writing really compelling stories for kids that were, you know, suspenseful and scary without being like over the top or wildly inappropriate. You know what I mean?
Right.
Stories that had consequence too. I mean, they're, you know, characters didn't always make it out of them. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like it was a real, you know, fuzzy wuzzy, like everybody wins in the end type stuff. A lot of times, like, you know what I mean? So I can't wait to see, you know, what he could contribute to Marvel Comics in that way, because he's got quite the devious mind, but he also has a really good grasp of how to make it accessible, you know. So, you know, I'm really excited to see what comes up out of this. It has a lot of potential.
Yeah, I didn't grow up reading it. I was around that age range, but I grew up very sheltered, and it was horror. And
right, well, you were a little, you know, because I'm 32 at the time of this recording. You're in your later 30s, so it was a little out of your age bracket. You know what I mean? You would have been reaching down a bit to read it.
Well, that's the thing, is because you have a love for Goosebumps, and Goosebumps was kiddie stuff. I have my love of R.L. Stein from Fear Street.
Fear Street as well, Fear Street,
yes. And that was young adult novels.
Well,
that,
see, but that was the thing, is like Fear Street started coming out when I was transitioning into, you know what I mean? So like, it personally for me, my personal reading, I jumped way, way ahead by that point. You know what I mean? Like, because I was always a aggressive reader. I was always way ahead of most of the kids in my grade and stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, so when other kids started reading stuff like Fear Street, I started reading adult novels, you know. And
yeah, I was reading Dean Koontz.
Right.
And those kind of things.
He said adult novels.
Oh,
romance. No. Yeah, I had a lot of Harlequin stuff going
but,
on.
So here's the thing with R.L. Stein. My kids found Goosebumps on Netflix, and they were watching it. And not that the books translate. We know how movies or and TV treat books, right? But I could see the underlying effect of what he did. Everything he did had a fear effect to it, right? It had something mm-hmm. scary, but it was never overwhelmingly scary. It was right. never, I'm going to give you nightmare scary. And there was always an aspect of hope to it, if you will. Something yeah. fun is a little bit lighthearted without being Scooby-Doo. I mean, Scooby-Doo is right. just tons of fun, right? But it was that middle ground between, I'm not going to scare the crap out of you and keep you up all night every night for weeks, mm-hmm. but I'm also not going to be Scooby-Doo. And I saw that. And of course, when they did the movie with Jack Black last year, the year before, I took my kids to see it and I enjoyed it. I could see why, if you're that age, why it does resonate and why it is fun to read. Because
as a 32-year-old yeah. man, I watched that Goosebumps movie and I still enjoyed it.
I mean, did you cry tears of joy? Because no. It seems like they did a great job. I mean, no, from not being a fan, but seeing the show, it seems like they did a good job of the movie.
For the most part, I've seen most people respond that, like, while it wasn't the most amazing film ever made, it wasn't terrible. You know, it was a serviceable tribute.
I liked the idea that his stuff was real.
Yeah,
and he had these really cool stories locked away. Yeah,
and it was really cool how they referenced most of the really big stories too, like the ones that stood out to people. You know, so they all appeared, even if it was only like as a brief, you know, reference or whatever in stuff that was happening. So you know, no, they did a really good job, and Jack Black nailed it. You know, I mean, he's the man. I'm a big fan of Jack Black.
Yeah.
Probably because he's like my spirit animal.
and I'm going to have to.
You're going to Superman this thing, aren't you?
No, I'm not. I haven't seen the movie because the TV show, it didn't. I tried watching a few episodes with my little brother, but I always liked Are You Afraid of the Dark and Erie, mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, right? Is Erie, Pennsylvania?
Right.
Yeah.
Erie, yeah.
Those were the ones that I liked, and those came out a few years ahead. So you know, a few years ahead of that. So by the time that came out,
The Dark was legitimately terrifying.
Yeah. I felt like it was a little too kiddie, and I never gave it, I probably just never gave it a fair chance. I mean,
yeah.
But, you probably weren't the demographic for it then.
Exactly. So, I didn't have any kind of nostalgia feels for the movie when it came out, so I didn't feel compelled to go see it. I heard good things about it. The best things, the greatest things, let me just tell you. They were so, so good.
Well, I would say
true scariness.
I would say, Chris, at your spot in life, if it comes across, I don't know if you have HBO or Netflix or anything like that, but if it comes across your radar and you got nothing else to do, you probably would enjoy it. It's a fun popcorn movie.
Okay.
But as your kids get older and maybe they discover Goosebumps, you'll absolutely like watching it with them. Okay. If they're the right demographic. You know, once they get to that point, because I think they're still a little young. I know your newest one is too young for it.
Yeah.
But so that's going to be interesting that he is doing something with Marvel. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that I ever really foresaw coming, because for the longest time, right, comics tried to say, we're not for kids. We're not children's books. We're for young adults and adults.
Yeah,
I guess we've done that for decades now that we can come back full circle and go, hey, no, we're going to make some special books for kids now. Well, and it might not be for kids.
I don't know that they're specifically for kids, because, I mean, he's written a number of adult novels, too. He's just not as famous for them.
Hmm.
So I really think what he's probably – I think we hit the nail on the head with the monsters thing. You know, like, he's probably going to be involved in that, and that'll be cool. You know what I mean? And honestly, I mean, it's probably a little bit of a marketing ploy, too, to get a name like that attached to it. It'd be like getting Stephen King to come write, you know, on a book for a little while.
Yeah, like they did for X-Files. They got him to come write a show episode for them for Halloween. Right.
It was, you know, there might be a little gimmick to it, but I think whatever he puts out, it'll be quality. I mean, the guy's got, you know, he's one of the best-selling authors of all time.
And let's be honest. Marvel, even when they do gimmicks, because you can today, even as a corporation, pay tons of money. I don't know what it'd take to pay it, but you get a comic book made specifically for your product to help sell your product.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's still good.
Some of them,
I mean, it's not going to be like the canon of collectibles or anything, but it's still, I've read some of them that are 4-H. My kids are involved in 4-H, and they got Marvel to do one for them as a whole organization. And it was decent, honestly, for a one-off. Here's help. We're helping promote this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's still going to be good, more than likely, because it's still Marvel behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, well, we've talked about how you can write to us and contact us. Of course, make your comments on the post on the page at giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel. You can comment right there on the show postings. Of course, facebook.com/breakingthepanel. The way you can help us out right now, the biggest thing we could get from you that would make our holiday season so wonderful is share the show. Subscribe on iTunes, give us a rating there, and tell your friends about the awesome fun that we have here on Breaking the Panel, and have them listen. That would be the best thing. We'd love for you to do that. Now, that's our marketing, right? That's our marketing right now. But there's a new trend in marketing that's going on that I shot you guys a picture of that. Actually, I'm not sure if I should be disturbed. I'm not sure if it even means anything yet. Maybe I'm reading into it. But we talked about BVS, right? They did the theater release and then the extended edition. And the extended edition doesn't change the characters, but it makes the movie coherent. And I really enjoyed it more. I enjoyed it the first time. I enjoyed it more with the extended cut. Suicide Squad. Now, the director is still standing by Suicide Squad saying, my vision was in the theaters. We're getting, what, 11, 12 more minutes on some extended cut. And Chris was the one who said it, but we all agreed. Okay, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, I'm going to burn your damn house down. But he didn't quite phrase it that way. But the idea is, okay, Warner Brothers, we're watching the next Warner Brothers film that comes out in the DC universe. If it has an extended cut, there probably will be internet riots. Because you can't do that to us. But there's also, we've talked about the, you know, they've put in more stuff. Now, here's where I'm getting to. As in the store, Ghostbusters, or, you know, Lady Ghostbusters, if you want to be rude about it. The newest Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters.
Excuse me. It's M'lady Ghostbusters.
it released on Blu-ray DVD just before Halloween. And my wife had said, oh, I got a if you find it somewhere for a different price, I've got a an Ibotta, which is basically a coupon app. You get refunds and whatnot. You get $2 or $3 off the movie, essentially. So, okay, and I happened to be in a Target, and of course, it's right there on the stand, and I picked it up, and I looked at it. I had to take a picture of the cover, because literally on the Blu-ray DVD, not only do I look for those, if I'm going to spend $20 on a film, one, I have to really like it, right? But two, I want multiple copies. I want to be able to watch it on my tablet, whatever the hell I want. That'd be the digital copy. Uh-huh. I want my Blu-ray for the highfalutin graphics and audio. And then the DVD, if somebody goes, hey, can I borrow that? Yeah, take the trash copy right there. There you go.
Or that's I found that's also good for the van copy when you're on the road.
Yeah, there you go. When you're on the road. Yep. Yep. Because things get lost, right? Kids mess up stuff, whatever. That it's the trash copy. It's the, it's cool. You broke it. It's fine. I got my good copy. You'll never see it again. But on the front of it, instead, it does say all that, but nice, big, bold, blue bar. Extended cut edition. An additional 11 minutes you did not see in theaters. And I went, huh. I mean, that was their marketing, just bold, right there on top. I'm like, and there's another part we'll get to, but I want to ask you guys, should we be concerned? I don't know, honestly, and we could look it up. That's not necessarily a bag, but we can look it up. I don't think Ghostbusters was a WB property, but should we be concerned that other people are following this suit if it's not a WB property? Say, hey, or is this part of that whole, we've always had director's cuts of different movies?
I don't know. It's that. It's like I cautioned the last time we talked about it, that I felt like maybe, for myself anyway, perhaps I was being too quick to judge Warner Brothers just because of other feelings on the projects.
Right.
But part of it too is there's a difference between putting a DVD out and on the cover saying, here's an 11 additional minutes of footage as you're picking up the DVD and considering whether to buy it. That's not the same as coming out with basically a nationwide campaign or a worldwide campaign saying, hey, right, buy this ultimate edition because that's the movie that should have been. There is a difference.
The parallel that I see is Ghostbusters movie met a lot of criticism before it came out, and then some amount of criticism after it came out. The Warner Brothers DC movies, the same thing. So I'm seeing that trend is holding true. It's almost as if like let's put some extra footage in, slap a sticker on the front of the DVD, and then that validates the fact that our movie's still good. It's still worth buying or whatever. Right. That's what I'm alarmed with, is like, oh, okay, so our theatrical cut didn't really hit the note we wanted it to. So we're going to add some footage back in, and we're going to convince people that, oh, it's a way better experience now. That's what I'm worried about. And I think it's a little bit shady, you know what I mean? Because it's
I agree.
Because I've heard, other people make the argument, well, Lord of the Rings had, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that was kind of wildly different, though. You know what I mean?
Let me touch on that. Because you that's a great example. And Chris, you've talked about, we've had director's cuts, we've had extended editions. But the difference that seems to be, they weren't on launch day of the movie. They were, the Lord of the Rings came out, the Fellowship of the Ring, normal cut. The Twin Towers is the second one, and then the Return of the King is the third one. Then, and only then, did they come out with a box set that included the director's edition extended cut.
Charles, I got to correct you.
Am I a little off on that?
Each film had its extended edition come out, but they didn't come out. You are right in the fact.
But they weren't on the launch day, right?
They weren't on the launch day.
No. Okay.
They came out after the theatrical cuts had come out and been out for at least a few weeks, if not a month or more.
And that seems to be how it was handled in the past. I remember Daredevil with Ben Affleck, got lots of grief or whatever. Yeah. And I didn't buy it. I went and see it in theaters and enjoyed it for what it was, but I didn't buy it. But then, I don't know how long after the DVD had been out, they did do a director's cut. Mm-hmm. And not extended edition, not extra footage, a different cut.
The Daredevil's director's cut was the same kind of thing that we're talking about with the Warner Brothers movies.
Oh, yeah, it changed the movie. It made it so much better.
It was an attempt to rectify mistakes. Now, so really what this all points to is, well, first of all, our example of Lord of the Rings. The thing with Lord of the Rings is that those movies, and I've tell a lot of people this, those movies were already pushing the boundaries of what's considered an acceptable feature film length in a theater.
3 hours of walking.
Right. So the extended editions really flesh out a lot of the side stuff for the people who are a big fan of you know, the books and the whole story, you know what I mean?
Right.
That weren't necessary for you to get the full viewing experience of the general story itself, you know? So, and that's the kind of stuff that I like to see. I like to see extended scenes that expand, you know, or cover stuff that we're familiar with that maybe doesn't contribute to the prime narrative, and that's fine, you know what I mean? But yes. I don't want to see, like, a recut of the edit where now it has a completely different tone because you screwed it up the first time around. Mm-hmm. That's
and I will stand by that was BVS. I mean, it became a spy thriller superhero movie on the Ultimate Edition.
See, I gotta check it out because I haven't seen that version of it yet, and I'm curious now.
My takeaway was all that random stuff with Lois Lane going, why? The Ultimate Edition really laced that in much better.
So, okay. So Paul, basically what you need to know is it explains the bullet.
Okay. So, right. It does a bit more, but yeah, yes, it explains the bullet.
It explains the bullet, and you get to know Jimmy Olsen's name. Thank you. Thank you so much for correcting the movie.
There's more. There's definitely more to it, but that is some of it. That was definitely a touch on some of it.
I mean, but in defense then of Ghostbusters, I don't know that there's anything that they could add to that movie that would make that a drastically different movie or fill in any gaps that, you know,
right.
2 minutes here, 2 minutes there of editing hitting the floor would have changed. I think that Ghostbusters, what we're looking at, is probably the same thing that we've been looking at. And I honestly, I'd almost like to go back and see the trend in marketing in the last few years, because when you talk about Lord of the Rings, it's a good example for this conversation, because that's one thing that irritated people when those movies came out, is you release the theatrical cut, and then not even that movie hasn't been on shelves for a year, and now you're bilking me for $40 more to get the extended cut. Why not just give that to me on the front end?
I kind of like that idea.
See, personally, I never bought the regular versions. I waited for the extended cuts.
No, and I was the same way. And right. I think at the time I was working at FYE, and I saw the bottom line. I was like, yeah, definitely waiting until the extended cut comes out. I'll rent it if I just have to see it again.
Right.
But a lot of people, you know, I mean, impulse shoppers, you know, or
yeah.
And that those movies, the first time that they would come out on DVD was near the holiday season.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
it was, you know, it was either the next holiday season or 6 months later, and that extended edition's come out. I'm like, come on! Plus, you charge me $30, you know, between $20 and $30 for the theatrical release, and then you're going to charge me $40 for something that's easily five times better. Where's the price?
Yeah, because I mean, that was the other thing. If you want to talk about doing like extended versions of DVDs or Blu-rays, the extended versions of Lord of the Rings were packed full of value. If you were at all curious about how those movies were made, the behind the scenes, there was like, with each one that came out, there were like 10 hours of behind the scenes. Like, each film.
Yeah.
So you're talking about like, there's almost a 40-hour work week worth of extra material about how they did the costuming, how they did behind, you know, some of the, they'd covered everything, how they built sets, how they, you know, how they did the forced perspective. Like, it was amazing. And, if you're into filmmaking, or if you're into like the nature of how these things come to the screen, that was all there. And I see a couple, you know, like the Deadpool behind the scenes was pretty good, you know, as far as modern standards go, because they don't go all out like they did in the early 2000s, mid 2000s, when they were trying to sell a ton of DVDs for literally every movie on the planet.
Right.
They don't have to do quite the same thing that they were doing back then. But like Deadpool was a great example of one that described the whole struggle of getting it to the screen. And then, you know, they showed a lot of the stuff. Star Wars, as much as I hate the prequels, they had a lot of behind the scenes stuff that made it worth it if you were interested at all. Granted, that's where I always pull evidence of, you know, Lucas's tyranny from those, because if you look for the subtle hints, it's there.
So here's the thing. You know, before we go really deep into that, I'm not a huge guy on watching these. I want to enjoy the movie. Mm-hmm. With Deadpool, I definitely want to watch the stuff you're talking about, but that's the only second movie I've ever wanted to. The first one was The Matrix. I love The Matrix series. It's my jam. And they came out with a limited edition, you know, box set that had 10 discs in it, the three movies and the extra. And that's the only extra I've ever watched fully. It's called The Matrix 1.5, and it was how they did all the fighting, and it was a good 2 hours long documentary. I watched the crap out of it three times. You loved it. But I was thinking, oh, you know, I never did buy the collector's edition, and it never did blow up like it's going to be $1 million or anything, and it had a Neo bust in it that I wanted. So I just went on eBay right now because you made me think of it. $31, I can get the whole thing sealed new.
Oh, that's cool. On eBay.
So sometimes these things don't become the collector's editions that they hope for. But you all, both of you nailed it on the head. They want to make more money. Mm-hmm. So they are adding things in. Now, I do want to talk about my experience watching the movie, Ghostbusters, because this was the first time I saw it. I did not buy the movie. I actually rented it. I'm going to go to Redbox and rent it.
Like tissues and lotion? Because I don't need to hear about your experience watching the movie. Keep it to yourself.
Well, your mom enjoyed it. Watch it with me. I'm sorry, listeners. That's a throwback to a thing he did for one of our friends of the show, Travis Jones. What about on the picture down in the bottom corner? I think this was probably decent, even though I'm burned on the whole Rotten Tomatoes thing because of how people use it, which is not anything to do with me, and I shouldn't be mad about it. But the marketing put the Rotten Tomatoes logo in the bottom corner.
Certified fresh.
I'm like, that's kind of an interesting take on it. At first, I was pissed off because I'm burning. It's, again, my fault. But because of what you said, Klotz, it got a lot of flack up front. And then even you went to see it and you go, I was pleasantly surprised. I've kind of changed my stance. I kind of like this movie.
I've always, since I've seen the film, I've held the stance that I had a good time. I laughed. I enjoyed myself. I didn't hate it. You know, there were a couple scenes that I thought were kind of dumb, but I had a good time. However, I'm so glad you brought up this Rotten Tomatoes sticker, okay? Because I did a little Googling while we were recording here, and I have the Rotten Tomatoes page for Ghostbusters 2016 pulled up.
Okay.
And I see, now here's one of the things. When we talked about this in the past, I've seen criticism all over the place that Rotten Tomatoes is not as honest as it pretends to be. And you start to see that might, you know, actually have some legitimacy when you look at this. Ghostbusters is certified fresh Rotten Tomatoes, but it has a 73% among critics and a 6.5 out of 10 average rating with 299 reviews.
Does that mean?
Well, that to me, you know, if you're scaling from 1 to 100%, and you're coming in at 73%. Now, this is only counting critics. This means it has to be published in a relatively reputable source. You know, it's got to be, whether it's a website or a newspaper or any kind of periodical where they consistently have critics that actually get paid to post their reviews. Not like a random fan blog and stuff like that. You know, they don't catch those and record those. 73% is like barely passing. You know what I mean? Like, if you think of this in terms of...
Like a school grade.
Yeah, like, you know, this is like a C. And, like, if not a D, you know, depending on, you know, curve. Like, that's not great. Like, why is this certified fresh? This didn't even score in the top percentile, you know, like the top quarter. It's just shy of it.
And this is theoretical. Maybe they wouldn't. But wouldn't they need to have some kind of agreement with Rotten Tomatoes to use their logo, because that would be a legal thing.
That's what I'm saying.
And do that. So how did it get certified for
fresh? Right. This is clearly an endorsement, and I'm incredulous about this. You know what I mean? The other thing is the audience score, which, well, I'll get to in a second, but the audience score is 55% liked it. Average rating of a 3.1 out of 5 with over 110,000 user ratings. Now, the caveat with the audience score is going to be this. We know that there were a lot of haters. We know that there were a lot of people who, for whatever reason, just hated this movie because it had women, whatever. Or they just hated the fact that it was a reboot, you know, any of that stuff. So it's very possible that the audience score is going to be skewed by some kind of brigading in that sense, you know, the trolls turning up and, you know, trying to tank it. But it's really, you know, it's only 18 base points away from the critic review. And it's not that like a 73% is like, oh, this was a garbage film. You know, it wasn't like this was a meant to be B movie fare forever.
It's much better than 20%, right? that's a throwback to an old From the Helicarrier episode too.
But yeah, so I just wanted to point that out, that I'm like, I call some question to the fact that this is certified fresh by Rotten Tomatoes when it doesn't have an amazing score like, say, Star Trek Beyond comes out on DVD this week. It's got an 84%. That sounds a little bit more fresh to me. You know what I mean? I'm trying to see, like, I can't pull it up quickly here and look at what the top movies of the last year or so have been. But
is that because Rotten Tomatoes is binary? You don't have a middle ground. You're either fresh or you're rotten. So there's a line you've got to cross at some point. So it's, you know, if the cop pulls you over for speeding because you're doing 1 mile over the speed limit, well, there's got to be a cutoff somewhere.
But right. Well, the thing is, though, if you look at the way, like, if you look at their sidebar, right,
uh-huh.
they have things that are, you know, if it's a Rotten Tomato, it gets the green sploosh of the Rotten Tomato. If it's fresh, it gets the red tomato. But if it's certified fresh, it gets the little gold banner around it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So there's a difference. And I'm not seeing, I guess it's showing Top Rentals, Lights Out is getting a 77%, and that's certified fresh. Captain Fantastic is an 82% with certified fresh. So perhaps, you know, maybe their criteria is only like 70%. I don't know. Mm-hmm. That seems pretty low, though. It's to me, you know, I would expect like an 80% or at least a 75% or higher. You know what I mean? For me personally.
But when you look at, because there's the 299 critic reviews, and of those, 217
were fresh,
and only 82 were rotten. So it's not, so on the review side of it, they're looking at, it's a binary system. There's no middle ground. It's either a good review or it's a bad review.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also takes average rating.
No, you know? Right, absolutely. But I've always wondered how they weight the ratings, like right. the New York Times or the Los Angeles Times Film Review, is that going to rate higher than the Ohio Tribune?
Right.
You know,
and similarly, how do they translate someone like Siskel and Ebert when they used to do it? They would do the thumbs up system, you know? Mm-hmm. So how do you translate that to a scale of 1 to 10?
Right. Well, that's where we're getting way too precise, way too detailed, right, in my opinion. No. Listen, Siskel and Ebert, though, when you watch it, one of two shows to watch on TV. Leonard Maltin was the other one, right? Uh-huh. And it was a review in the sake of, oh, I like Siskel's take on movies. He sees movies kind of the same way I say. Like, I liked Star Wars, he liked Star Wars. I liked whatever, he liked whatever. So you go, okay, his opinion means if it's positive, I'll like it. If it's negative, I probably won't like it, because I've developed, artificial as it is, relationship with, I can see that he likes what I like, so I can use his opinion. Whereas Ebert, maybe it was the opposite of me. If I liked something, he hated it. Mm-hmm. That's what reviews should be used as. But now we're breaking it down to which one rates higher, and maybe the reviewer is having a pissy day because he's going through a divorce. You know, it should be about, if you want to follow a review, it should be about, do I agree with your opinion? If so, then I'm probably going to like that word of mouth review. Speaking of, we should probably talk about our opinions of the film soon.
If you click that little button at the top and go just to top critics.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a 59%.
Oh, interesting.
And it's,
I'll say, and that's the thing with numbers. You can always jiggy numbers, man.
Well, right.
You look at the all critics and then the top critics, and that's where if they're going to weight the system, that's where the weighting would lean to. But you're only looking at an aggregate of 49 reviews out of the 299.
Yep. And, you know, of those 49, 29 are fresh, 20 are rotten. So that's that's very close to a 50-50 split, as the 59% represents. So that sounds like it's much more of a mixed bag. Now, Charles, one other thing I wanted to say in regards to what you're saying, like, about reviewers, one of the things that, like, Siskel and Ebert did really well, and what all critics should do, is they explain how they feel about things, and they'll talk about different stuff, you know? So the kind of like we do when we talk about our feelings on something, we identify what we really liked and we identify what we didn't like. And in a way, good critique leads to educating the audience a little bit on, you know, the nature of the film, you know what I mean?
Or
the films, you know, and it highlights stuff that it works for them. So, you know, you can take a movie like Ghostbusters and say, oh, well, I thought it was well cast. I thought everybody, you know, really performed quite well. But I think the editing flow was a little, because that's one of the things we talk about, right? You know, BVS. I don't think there were a lot of objections to most of the casting with BVS, except for maybe Luther. But the way it was edited was clearly a big problem for a lot of people. Now, Chris being on the outside edge of that, where he's like, well, I just don't like the tone in general. Yeah. But you, Charles, your opinion was, you know, further enforced by the re-edit, right?
Right, right. So, yes.
So that's the kind of stuff you look at with good critique, you know what I mean? Which which a scaling system doesn't really, you know, that doesn't illustrate what's really going on there. That's when you have to start actually reading reviews.
Absolutely. And that's, but we've been saying that from even, you know, BVS reviews. It's don't go to an aggregate site. Mm-hmm. if you want to look at critics that align with you and have, you know, it's fine to go to individual critics and see what they're saying, but don't base it on an aggregate site because you're not getting all of the metrics that went into it, all of the opinions that formed those numbers. You're just getting this extrapolation of data, and it's not even information that you're getting. This is hard data, not information.
Yeah.
Yes.
So your feelings, Charles, tell us.
I enjoyed the ever-loving crap out of it. I thought it was fun.
And that's been breaking the panel for this week, folks. Thank you.
So, no. Okay, you didn't give Klotz that much grief when he went to the theater and saw it. Came out. I was like,
no, I'm just saying we ran out of time. But no, you're good.
Oh, okay. All right.
I enjoyed the movie too.
The short and sweet of it was I was impressed every time they started to do a catch line from the famous song or from the thing. Like, oh, what about this tagline? If you see something, God, my brain is froggy. What's the line of the song? Something strange in the neighborhood. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
It goes, if something strange in the neighborhood, who you gonna call? And before they can say it, right, the TV behind them goes, Ghost, whatever, the TV show mocking. And I was like, that is funny little moments. It did two or three like that. Of course, they did the symbol on the wall, which was acted out very well, where the guy was like, he's almost has to, and he's taunting Leslie, whatever her name is, Leslie Jones. And I thought that scene was very fun. But every freaking person except Rick Moranis, and of course, I had his name to try to
Harold Ramis.
Thank you.
Harold Ramis actually had a cameo, just not, you know, his physical body.
Was he one of the ghosts?
in the beginning of the film, when she's in the office with her supervisor, Kristen Wiig is.
Yeah.
His bust is on a. Yeah.
Like, is that who that was? Uh-huh. I knew that was, but it was kind of so badly sculpted. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, it was very subtle. It was in the background, but it was amazing. I was so happy to see that.
Okay. Oh,
it wasn't Lionel Richie, hello, bad, but it was.
Yeah. the sculpt was a little off, but I was like, that sculpt looks kind of familiar, and it seems like I should know what that is, but I don't know what that is. So that was Harold Ramis.
Oh, Charles.
But yeah. Rick Moranis, man, Ricky, why'd you turn down a cameo? That was the only one on my bingo card that I needed to win the game. You know, everybody was there, and I got so excited because I wasn't looking for him. I was actually surprised by the cameos because I thought, and I am not this hardcore person who follows every bit of news about the movie that I want to see. So I knew at one point there was two different Ghostbusters on the table to be made. One, the original Ghostbusters were behind. The other one, they weren't. You know, like, they were supporting it, and the other one wasn't, and there was a battle, and then one got dropped, and I didn't know which was which. So to see them just show up in the film was like, yeah, you know, there's that person. And then at some point, I realized they were all going to be in there.
Yep.
And I kept looking for Rick Moranis. I even went to the after credit scenes, which was funny. The after credit scene was funny. But I was like, come on, Rick Moranis. You just have to. And he didn't.
He's retired. He stuck to his guns.
He did. He stuck to his guns.
Dan Aykroyd was actually quite vocal about his support for the movie.
Mm-hmm. Good. I kind of remember that, but I've fogged those things out of my brain. I mean,
he a little bit came out to the defense of the ladies. You know what I mean? He was like, you know, they're great. Like, anybody who thinks that they're not great is stupid. Kind of like, he said something along those lines. I mean, this movie wasn't bad. Huh. It was definitely poorly marketed early on.
Yeah, that whole 25 years ago this happened and made us think it was a continuation when it wasn't.
Well, that was the other thing is my biggest gripe about the movie overall is that it had a hard time with its own identity. Uh-huh. Like, it's like, oh, well, we're not a continuation, we're not a reboot, because they were trying to say that it wasn't a reboot the whole time, and I'm like, but it is a reboot.
But it is a reboot. Yeah.
You recast all these people and everything,
and it's almost beat for beat.
And it is beat for beat. Ultimately, like, I don't know, it. Like I said, I enjoyed it. It wasn't horrible by any stretch. I had a good time. I don't think that it was like an amazing, you know, I wouldn't give it an A, you know what I mean?
Would you give it a 73?
I would personally say it did what it set out to do. It was a fun romp with great graphics, yep, and it made me laugh many different times over. Mm-hmm. And even a scene I saw in the previews where I don't remember any of the characters' names, but the blonde chick who was weird, her weirdness grew on me and I actually really enjoyed it, but she's really weird. Yep. She pulls out the little pop-out pistols and licks the gun. I just cracked up so hard at that. Don't know why. It made me laugh so hard when she licked the gun. I'm like, that's so gross.
I think, you know, above all else, this is definitely going to propel her career. I mean,
yeah, she was good.
And Leslie Jones, not quite to the same measure, but like, will also, I think they'll both book a lot more, you know, films and stuff like that going forward. The talent was there. I mean, all four of the ladies are tremendously talented.
And none of them phoned it in.
Because like
Hemsworth did, but nobody else.
Well, you know, that's a fair criticism. I felt like Hemsworth was one of the weakest parts of the film.
Yeah, it's almost like, why? Yeah. I mean, he is a high level actor. He can bring an A game. Maybe he's not a comedic actor because he wasn't
now,
funny.
I will agree with you guys if you're talking the point at which he's possessed and he's playing a different character. But when he was the dumbass, like, I was laughing up every time he was on screen.
He was much funnier during that part.
I didn't think he was. It was lost on me.
When he said he's not going to listen to it and he covers his eyes, just simple stuff like that. I'm just like, come on.
I mean, when you said it, I laughed. I watched it. I didn't really laugh. You know, I don't know what it was.
I think part of that was the editing. The beats, his beats didn't hit the way they were supposed to, I don't think. I think a little careful editing, you know, it would have been a little bit better.
Although, I think this probably was an extended scene and not in the full theatrical release. But after everything's done, right, and he's sitting there eating a sandwich. I love they call out everything. Right? Because when he's being interviewed, I see his finger go through the glass. Well, there's no glasses in those glasses. And a beat later, they go, where are your lenses? Like, oh, awesome. They're calling it out. He's eating a sandwich. And like, wait, we saved the world? You made a sandwich? Melissa McCarthy takes the sandwich, right? She throws it away.
Yep.
Well, I don't know if this was in the theater, but in the edition I watched, he goes, a little help, please. And they throw him a sandwich back. And she like looks behind her, looks at him like, what? No. She takes that sandwich and throws it away. He goes, can I get something to drink? And somebody throws him a bottle of water.
Yeah, that's
and
extended.
She's like, and she astounded, right? She's looking around. He drinks it. And a muffin. And she throws it. She's like, then she's like, what? Are you a wizard? What the? And that scene cracked me up. Because that felt like an outtake that they decided to put back in. Like, that was just a real thing of him just goofing. That was him at his funniest in that film.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah. The initial part of that where she throws a sandwich away was in the film, but the rest of it wasn't.
Oh, yeah. I figured the way they played it, it felt like just they kept running, and then they put it in the extended. It's funny. Now, it doesn't mean you should go buy the extended edition and watch it just, but it was definitely, it takes you out of the film. But that's what I liked about Ghostbusters. They were somewhat serious, but at the same time, they kept calling out the BS, right, as they went along. Bill Murray was the audience spokesperson. He would call out the BS constantly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, not only Rick Moranis was missing in the cast from the original movie, and I'm surprised that you didn't mention somebody that did deserve mentioning.
Who did I miss?
The horse from the horse-drawn carriage. Oh, I mean, God.
I was all prepared to feel bad, man.
No, but... when you said ghost, when you were talking about the lead-ins to the song, that to me, that was the worst thing about that movie. That not the lead-ins, but Fallout Boy and Missy Elliott and what they did.
Oh, no, I loved it. I love Fallout Boy.
You know, I hated it when I first heard it, but it grew on me by the end of that movie.
So terrible. Mold grows, too. That doesn't make it good. It's so bad for your health.
Well, you know, there is something for everybody. They did play the classic. They played a couple different versions. I enjoyed the Fallout Boy version. I've been playing it a lot for the Halloween gigs I've been doing lately, too. So I don't know. But with all that being said, we got a few more things to hit, and we are running out of time. So, hey, go check out Loot Crate. Right, this month is magical, where you're going to get Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts, and Where to Find Them, Big Trouble in Little China, and more. All of it. 100% exclusive, every last piece in this box. You've gotten to the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern, to subscribe, and then it's gone. So go ahead and get it. Go to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up and enter code giant-size-team-up to save, I think it's $3 off on any new subscription. Give that a whirl. It's going to make your day.
Is there going to be any stuff from Rounders in that box? Because, I mean, they play with cards, and cards are magic, so that's got to be the random movie that just
the random movie that they're going to put in.
That's the speed for the magic box.
You know, the magic of that movie is that it actually got made and was really good, that's in my opinion.
No, oh, that movie is amazing.
Yeah.
Though, you know, one of the things you called out in that box, Big Trouble in Little China. Mm-hmm. Did somebody just acquire the rights to that? Because I'm seeing it everywhere.
It must be.
Yeah,
or maybe it's like a 25th, 30th anniversary, something like that we're not that aware of.
See, well, go ahead, Chris.
Just a few weeks ago, we posted the IDW that has the comics rights for it, and they're doing they're doing an Escape from New York, Big Trouble in Little China crossover.
That's awkward.
That's a different character.
Okay, because there's a board game. A deck-building game called Legendary that originally came out as a Marvel game, had a number of expansions, and they've done other licensed versions, like they did Aliens, and they also now more recently have done Firefly, but a little bit before that they did Big Trouble in Little China, and one of my friends has that version of it, and it's fun, but I'm like, this is such a random movie. Like, it's kind of a cult classic, but it's not one of the big ones that people talk about all the time. You know what I mean?
It'd be kind of like playing a deck building game on Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Well, see, no, that would be a marketing smash. Like, people would just buy it out of principle.
I'm talking about from the game mechanics. How do you do that?
Right, yeah.
No. You know?
Yeah, so that's the thing. I'm just seeing Big Trouble in Little China everywhere. And I'm like, somebody must have just gotten those rights and is like peddling them like a fiend right now because they're just like everywhere.
You gotta make some money. Yeah. Peddling leads us into our next thing because, you know, they've backpedaled off of this a couple of times now. Flash has lost its director again, and I think we're of the collective. Okay. What do you guys, what are your, I haven't read the details on it, but my initial response was, it's news, but I think we are micro-analyzing everything that goes on with every film nowadays. So the films lose directors all the time. I don't think this is a big deal. What do you guys think?
They do, you're right. But what you're looking at is a studio that's had trouble hitting the mark for a majority of the audience and for critics. You have a studio that has said repeatedly, we're all about the directors and their visions, and they've proved it with Zach in his first two movies, and now they're starting to draw back, as we can see with Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. And now you have a movie that has lost two directors, this one for creative differences. So while, yes, directors come and go, people come and go from movies all the time. Yes, you're right. It's just, it's a culmination of events. And this one, I think there's a little bit more ability to say, okay, maybe there's something going on.
Right.
Now, if we lost Ezra Miller from The Flash, that would be...
Nah, because I know somebody that could take over in a heartbeat, in a flash, as it were.
Would that be Idris Elba?
Yeah, absolutely. Why would you think I'd think anybody else?
God, I would kill to see Idris Elba. Okay, Funny or Die or somebody has to do a short internet video of Idris being the entire Justice League, including Wonder Woman. I would watch all day long.
Well, okay, so I'm going to jump in on this. I feel like we have an issue here with a studio that's trying to find its way. And, I don't know if this is a good sign or a bad sign, you know? I don't know if this is them self-correcting and saying, all right, listen, you know, we've kind of flubbed these last few. and we need to really like change things up quite a bit. And, you know, the tone that you're building right now is more of the same and we need different. And he's like, oh, well, peace. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or if it's like maybe the opposite, maybe they're like, oh, well, you know, so I don't know. It's really hard to figure out. I can't imagine a world where people at Warner Brothers aren't literally crapping their pants right now because they've had a number of bombs in a row. Because like Suicide Squad, well received by some people, but not widespread, you know, raving reviews by any stretch either. So you've got Man of Steel had mixed reviews, BVS has mixed reviews, Suicide Squad has mixed reviews. None of those have been smash successes that people were rallying behind. And now you've got Wonder Woman coming and then Justice League and Flash after that. It's now or never. Like, this is going to define the future of their franchise if they don't start really sealing the deal with some solid films. And I think Wonder Woman is kind of self-built. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty easy to construct a Wonder Woman film. You know, it's going to be a very heroic saga style film, and that's going to be good. So I'm excited for that because I think that's a relatively easy beat to hit. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's tonally stuff like The Flash is a little bit wildly different. So I don't know. We'll see how this all pans out, but it's definitely something to note, you know, and wait and see how it all shakes out. But
yeah, maybe R.L. Stine will work on it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And one other thing, keep in mind, we just watched Deadpool lose its director over the similar, you know, creative differences. Mm-hmm. So
well, but that in that case it was almost him against Ryan Reynolds, and we're like, no sir. Yeah. Ryan Reynolds is gonna win.
Well, yeah, as far as we know. So I mean, that's the other thing is it's I don't know, there's been a lot of shakeup lately, especially with these comic property movies. A couple of them have lost directors. I mean, Ant-Man lost its director, and then we got a great film anyways. I mean, it's not the best of the Marvel films, but it's not a bad film by any stretch.
No, it's great. It's a great film, and that's a little different because, I mean, there was already footage shot, and that's where this is better. I mean, at least if we're talking about some sort of vision correction, it's happening pre-production.
Right.
And that would speak, I think, so much worse for Warner Brothers if there was film shot and this happened.
Now, I would get really concerned if they hired Brett Ratner to direct this movie, though. Then we might have something to worry about.
Yeah, it couldn't be worse than BBS, right?
No, it could be Punisher Warzone.
Graphically, it was not the best, but
I am about to truly fire you on the air if you say anything good about that film.
I think tone, characterization, I think the amount of violence that was in that movie, what they show, I think that was a comic book coming.
It was like a trauma film.
Absolutely, but it was a Punisher comic book come to life.
It was. That's not inaccurate. It had
You're both plot. Fired. No, you're both fired.
That movie had no plot, but it's definitely a Punisher film.
There was a dude doing parkour, and somehow a heat-seeking missile curled its way and followed him and hit him in midair and blew him up.
Sounds like a Punisher comic book.
Oh, no. I hate you so much right now.
You could mind canon BVS, and you can't mind canon that. Come on.
I am out. I am out on that one. We gotta move on.
You can't trash talk Troma because the director of friggin' Guardians of the Galaxy 1 and 2 is Troma alum.
And?
So be nice to Troma.
No. All right. So I Warzone was horrible. It was Frankenweenie. It was bad. So Google it if you don't know what Frankenweenie is. There's two of them. They're both horrible. All right, so we got this one, then we got an email we got to get to. But we have the announcers, right? The Fenders will have a bunch of people we hoped they would have, but we didn't know for sure. But yeah. Chris, you did say that you thought this was coming.
Mm-hmm. There's a bit of a Twitter update here where Rachel Taylor, Scott Glenn, and Rosario Dawson are going to return for Defenders. And they had a cool graphic on Twitter that shows all three characters, and then it says, "Those who surround us define us." Hashtag Defenders. So that's pretty cool because it definitely lends itself to basically making the statement that they're going to focus on the support characters as well. So it's not going to be just the big characters. So it's going to be a fully integrated story, which is a good thing. Because, you know, it's kind of like what people feared about the first Avengers movie before it actually came out. They're like, you know, is this going to be a mess with so many characters? And then they prove, you know, Joss Whedon proved that you can make a great film with a bunch of disparate characters that all get their moment to shine and all have, you know, their moments in the sun. So
right.
I think we're going to see more of the same. And I think we're going to see the awesome performances of the support characters continue in Defenders. So I'm really excited about that because I'm a big fan of everybody that was mentioned in that, you know.
I love the interlacing of it all.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be interesting because this is a big opportunity for the TV properties and Jeff Loeb to really strike out and say it's not a knock against us that we don't have Kevin Feige
right
here, because that's the other thing is, yeah, Joss did a great job, but you still had that captain at the ship,
mm-hmm.
Helping to direct the overall vision. You know what I mean? So, and where the TV side doesn't have that, and sometimes they've taken a knock because people are like, well, you don't have Kevin Feige, so you're the B team at best. And if anything, these Netflix shows have come out every time swinging and shown, not really.
Netflix has lots of original content, but they market the crap out of the Marvel one. It becomes their logo for months when a new Marvel show is dropping.
Yep.
You know, even today, if you look, I'm not literally today because I didn't look, but even recently, okay, even with Luke Cage being out, if you look at a promo for Netflix, Daredevil is still like the Netflix boy. Now, probably didn't hurt that he's all red and that's their color scheme, but anywhere you go, Daredevil is forefront and center on Netflix stuff.
Well, even
that's how well these shows are doing.
Even
for Netflix.
Luke Cage, you know, I on the internet I bump into ads from time to time, and like if I'm watching Hulu or something like that, or not Hulu because Hulu doesn't advertise for Netflix, but where I see ads online, I see
that's lots not of Luke true. Cage. Actually, I saw a Luke Cage ad on Hulu.
Oh, did you? Okay, so maybe that is where I keep bumping into it. I just thought for a second, I was like, that there's no way that they would advertise a competing service, but I guess it makes sense. Yeah, anyways, Luke Cage is getting advertised everywhere still, you know, very prominently. So yeah, no, Netflix runs with those. They're like, oh, we're about it. You know, and the thing is, you would think a vast majority of the people who are going to watch it would watch it in those first couple weeks. Right. And here we are more than a month out and they're still, you know, still banging that drum. So that speaks pretty strongly to how popular these shows are and how much they mean, you know? So.
Yeah. All right. Right now we got to do what we always do. We put the ads right here. We're going to ask you to listen to them real quick. We'll be back with your email coming up next. And we're back and we're going to hit this email. Then we're going to have to get out of here, but we've had a great show today, but we love to hear from you. So it's BTP@giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel. BTP@giantsizeteamup.com. This comes from longtime show friend and alum of FTH from the Helicare that has now retired, Anado. And he said, with Deadpool 2 sort of being in the headlights at the moment and with it being a Taco Tuesday at the time of this recording, I thought I could maybe share my thoughts on how they would set up the sequel and, believe it or not, fix all the problems with Marvel Fox Films. I thought they fixed all the problems with Marvel Fox Films with the first Deadpool. Do more of that. That works
for you,
Fox. Yeah,
but then
they
came out with Apocalypse and proved that.
But they didn't do more of Deadpool. They veered back away from it. I'm just saying.
Right.
Do more of that. I think Logan being rated R is more of that. We'll see how it plays out. Anyway, since the film is supposed to be supposed to feature Cable, a mutant who has psychic powers and the ability to travel through time. Oh, he's going to do a major retcon right here, isn't he? Anadoe is. He can play a big role to the story's plot in stopping the notorious Kang from ripping apart certain realities once he discovers the power of time travel. From there, it's nothing but an R-rated Back to the Future parody that completely saves everything Fox has ever put out in the past. That would be awesome. I would watch
the crap out of that. I thought we already had Days of Future Past.
Not with Deadpool at the wheel. You know he'd make so many Doc Brown references. Oh, it'd be awesome. He'd call Cable Doc Brown the whole time if they did
probably.
This.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. It's at this point in the zeitgeist, it might just be calling him Morty.
Oh, yeah. I would take that. You could have Deadpool be responsible for all these weird time gaps and missed opportunities, such as costume reveals, and we could see some really cool cameos from other characters Fox owns. Kang is related to Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four, so this could help bring back a new reimagining and love, hopefully, for the Marvel's first family. No. They need to burn that like a dumpster fire, give it back to Marvel, and let us have an Infinity War Part 2.
Yeah.
All right. But other than that, I love these ideas. Where'd I go? I just scrolled up. Since Ryan Reynolds is hoping to make the film just as campy as the first, this could be the perfect way to poke fun at all of Fox's mistakes of the previous installments of X-Men and Fantastic Four and still have it be a great story. Who knows? Maybe Deadpool was responsible for making Galactus a huge fart cloud. What if it was Deadpool who killed the Fox Marvel Universe? I guess we'll just have to wait and see how the direction of the film goes. Okay, honestly, Ryan Reynolds, you need to listen to this one episode to hear this email because I think you'd have fun with these ideas. It sucks that Tim Miller was bummed out from the project, but I'm happy to see he has other films under his belt that I will check out someday. With that in mind, I have to ask, who would each of you like to see helm the sequel? Negan. I want Negan to helm it. we'll get to this question.
Don't you mean the comedian?
No, I mean Thomas Wayne.
He's all those things.
I mean Daddy Winchester. That's who I mean. I don't even know if the actor could do it. I actually meant the character Negan helming it would be funny. All right. So truly, though, who would you guys like to see? He says people are petitioning that we get Quentin Tarantino for the film. He's not funny enough, honestly, in my opinion. While I adore the guy and praise him for all his works, I don't think he's the best fit. Who would you guys throw out as a director?
Who did Shoot 'Em Up?
I don't know that one. I can see Guy Ritchie doing this film. I think Guy and Ryan Reynolds would work well together.
I don't know why you would say Guy could do it and Quentin couldn't do it because they're just the UK-US.
Guy seems to have more tongue-in-cheek humor, whereas Quentin is subtle humor buried under lots of violence.
Quentin is best when he's doing his thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You don't want him doing somebody else's thing. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Guy Ritchie, you know, I think he's a little more tonally flexible, but yeah, he still does the Guy Ritchie thing. I get that. But yeah, no, I don't... Yeah. I don't know, Chris. Maybe we'll come to blows over that argument some other time. We don't have time today.
Michael Davis directed Shoot 'Em Up. And if you guys haven't seen Shoot 'Em Up, you do not even know what you're missing. Clive Owen, Paul Giamatti.
I think I have seen it. That sounds so familiar.
Using a carrot to fire his gun.
Yes! Yeah, it's been a while, but yes. He's silent. He didn't use the fire. He silenced the gun with a carrot, didn't he?
Paul Giamatti. No, he
said, "What's up, Doc?" or something like that.
And then Paul Giamatti grabbing dead lady boob. Come on.
No, okay. This guy would not work either because he only does his own thing. And I've watched the documentaries and know he's a horrible person to work with, it sounds like. Boondock Saints director. It's an odd. It's like Trent or something like that. Trenton. I can't remember his name. He's only done Boondock Saints 1 and 2.
Troy Duffy.
There you go. Yeah.
I
thought he only did the two, and I heard he's really hard to work with. And he wrote both of those films, and I love the Boondock Saints films, but I don't think he would be able to. But my thing is, I think whoever they end up getting who will work well with Ryan Reynolds, let Ryan Reynolds direct it himself.
Yeah, I think that's probably what's going to ultimately happen here. I don't see how it doesn't go down that way. Right.
I mean, right. Yeah, I'm with you. I can see how it doesn't go down. I can see like I can't even get a straight face. Gary Marshall directing it.
I don't want to say that he couldn't do it because I have faith that Ryan Reynolds can do just about anything he puts his mind to, but he doesn't have any directorial experience under his belt.
I thought he directed 9 or 7. Whatever the number of that movie was.
He does have some directorial experience, but he also basically constructed all of that first film. Tim Miller was involved, but Tim Miller did the... I really feel like the overall film was constructed by Ryan Reynolds, and the technical aspects was where Tim Miller really came in, you know, because he's a VFX artist. You know, and that was how they were able to do a lot of the stuff that they did. But I mean, they can find somebody else to do that. You know, he's not the only guy in the industry that can do that kind of stuff. You know, they'll find someone. So
now, as part of the film, like in the story on the screen that we see, it'd be fun to have Deadpool talk about the controversy and for a minute bring in Kevin Smith and then complain about how he doesn't get to punch anything and he shoots Kevin Smith to have a different director do it. That'd be kind of a fun moment. But I don't think Kevin Smith could direct this film. Not and give us what we want. So anyway, back to the email. If anything, I'd love to see Joel Edgerton not just play Kang, but also direct the film as he made possibly only one of the most surprising films of last year, The Gift. If you've not seen it, I highly recommend you check it out. I don't remember The Gift. It's kind of familiar, but it's
the one that's based on the book, right? Or maybe I'm thinking of something else.
Yeah, that's like every film out, man. The one that's based on the book. He also wrote the screenplay and acted in the film, so that is definitely something worth noting. Well, that's it for me. The keyboard has become way too big for this tiny hand of mine, and I bet something else is going to... Okay. I know it's a Deadpool reference, but I have to stop there. Other than that, I sit in my 5-star review. Thank you. Still patiently waiting for that truffle shuffle that was promised. You guys, I hate you. I haven't checked iTunes in a while. We need to see how many reviews we actually have. I love the show. Keep up the awesome and hope to be back soon. Anado, or better known to Paul as Ms. Ketches. P.S. I sent Chris an image of actor slash people I think would be in the film if you guys want to go over it. And yes, I'm going to call my version of the sequel Deadpool : Lauper before time after time. See if Cindy Lauper. Yes, thank you. We got the reference. It was good. Any other words on this gentleman?
No, I mean, there's definitely... The beginning has got me so, like, I agree with you. Fox needs to listen to this episode. And
it's real, real fun. But yeah, that is going to be all for this week. I think, thanks both of you. Glasses away from this headphones. Great show. Had fun with you. Love having these discussions. We want to range it beyond the three of us. We want you guys to have, and ladies, obviously, to have your say. Facebook.com/breakingthepanel. Twitter's @panelbreakers. Rate us on iTunes. Put your 2 cents in there. We'll read it. Go to giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel. Comment on the post, and of course our home away from home, where we're all putting news and comments and thoughts and headlines and everything else that comes across our table, facebook.com/breakingthepanel. Till next week, tune in to hear your email, because I have nothing else to say right now.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel. And you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at GiantSizeTeamUp.com.